Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to The Tinderbox. We are the podcast for Matchsticks and Gasoline, the Calgary Flames website for SB Nation. It's Mark, Maddie, and Michael today. No Gordy. Gordy's microphone decided it didn't want to play today. So, as we said, we're going to dock Gordy's pay for the afternoon. He goes to the principal's office. So, we got the three M's here today crushing it. Maddie, I'll go from my left to right. Maddie, how are you this afternoon?
Lovely. It's a beautiful day here in Pennsylvania, so I am enjoying being inside for it.
Is it lovely. Beautiful? The sun's out in PA?
Yeah.
We're in the middle of a three-day nor'easter up here, so it's done nothing but rain sideways and be windy and be cold and raw. I love New England's fun. It's great. It's great living near an ocean. Michael, how you doing in Calgary?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm enjoying the last kind of nice day. It's supposed to get like really cold starting on Friday, so we're enjoying like the last like nice day of the year before it becomes winter and gross. So not too bad.
I feel like so tomorrow's like the first real cold day. It was like yesterday the first real warm day. Is that like how Canadian summer turns into fall? It's like one day and then it's over.
Yeah, pretty much. It goes from like very lovely, I'm wearing shorts, to like crap, where's my parka?
And then Winnipeg's like, we don't even have summer. What is summer? How does that work? Like, or Manitoba in general.
Yeah.
That's Canadian 40, right? Not Massachusetts, Pennsylvania 40, because that's a totally different 40. Excellent. Okay. Well, now that we got the weather report out of the way for the day, that weather report brought to you by, that's somebody sponsor us. Somebody listen to this podcast and give us a weather sponsor. Cal Tire. I don't have tires. I'll come storm at your place anyway. So the Flames, four-game winning streak. Calgary hit the road, which, you know, East Coast trips can be a little difficult at times. And if you look at some of the crazy stats, the Flames hadn't played in Detroit in 606 days. They hadn't, who is it, like the Devils or the Capitals? It was like 1,000 days since they had seen a team like that. But 4-0 so far. Flames are looking really good on the road. Maddie, your impression so far of what you've seen of the Flames?
It's, things are fun. Are we having fun?
I think that's so. Like my,
a little bit. I don't know how to process it.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, it's been 2 years since the Flames have won four straight games, which seems mind-boggling bananas to me. I don't understand that. Michael, is this the real Flames, or are we just getting that, like, bring us up to the top of the roller coaster, just a whoosh, go right back down?
I don't know, because I said last week that I wanted to give the team like 30 games this year before I made a judgment one way or the other, and that was in the midst of they just lost their first two games and people were already panicking. So like, as much as I want to go like wild right now, at the same time, I'm kind of like, all right, I want to give it some more time to make sure, like, to see what they actually are, because we've seen teams before that start really well and then just fall off a couple months into the season. So happy right now, but like, I'm trying not to buy in too much, even though it's getting tough.
Now, when you look at what's going on right now, I mean, the Edmonton loss, Maddie and I both definitely agree. Ugmo, no need to ever have that again. The Ducks game was just bad. Like, that was, but you look at what they've done on the road. Detroit, that's a team they should have beaten. So that was good. They handled that well with a shutout. And then, you know, they come in and they start blowing out the Capitals, and then Ovi and company show back up. But Calgary weathers the storm with a backup goalie and gets the 2 points in overtime. Then they come in and absolutely manhandle the New York Rangers, which I was kind of surprised-ish. I didn't think it was going to be like that type of a game, but it was also kind of fun to watch Milan Lucic just absolutely run Adam Fox over twice in the same play. I thought that was kind of cool to see. And then New Jersey last night, the first period explosion of goals. It was like a Michael Bay movie all of a sudden, everything kerploding everywhere. Calgary's got goals. Mangiapane's got, what, two in the first period. And then, you know, a little sloppy puck play, and they end up with a 5-3 win. But, you know, Calgary's like, they're beating the teams they should be beating. And I think the Devils I'm using air quotes, hot start was shown to be nothing more than a blip on the radar, because they did not look good last night, did they, Maddie?
No, they didn't. And I mean, them not having Jack Hughes right now hurts, and they're on what, like their fourth goalie at this point. But also, like, you know, I don't think the Devils are that good anyway, so.
No, and honestly, like, Michael, like, watching that game last night, you talk about on goalies, like, they're, you know, Jonathan Bernier is their number one. He's out. Hughes is out. Then Dawes starts, and then actually I posted the preview the other day, and some Devils fan came on and was like, look, hockey, aren't we? Do you really, really? Dawes is going to handle his business. And at 4-0, I just responded with the what's up emoji, like the, you know, the shoulder shrug. But like, Michael, did you feel a little bit for Blackwood last night as he comes in and his first shot is Mangiapane coming streaking down the left side on a breakaway? Like, you know, it's just the Devils were already having a bad night, and then it continued from there on out.
Yeah, I kind of feel for Wedgwood. Like, he comes
Wedgwood,
in
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the woods.
Blackwood was injured. Wedgwood did.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I felt pretty rough that he probably faced like the hottest scorer in the NHL, like on a breakaway, his first shift after, I think it was Bratt on the Devils, just like toe picked and ate it into the boards to set up the breakaway pass for like Dubé to Mangiapane. Like, I'm sure he's just throwing his arms up as soon as like the play went. Like, what are you even going to do at that point? But I thought after that, he was actually pretty solid the rest of the way.
Kind of disappointed. He could have like Hašek'd it or done a little, you know, he could have come flying out and try to go at Mangiapane. But I like the thing I like most about that. We'll transition now into how awesome Andrew Mangiapane is. His patience on that play, like he was in the right spot at center ice, just took the puck, skated in, and didn't try to shoot. Like, that's the one thing, like when Lucic came in on his breakaway, which is a sentence I never thought we'd say this season or ever. You know, he immediately shot the puck right away. He was like, oh my God, I can score, and fired. Like, Mangiapane waited out Wedgwood, you know, waited him out, moved him to Mangiapane's right, then deked around him and tucked the puck in. He's pretty good, isn't he, Maddie?
Pretty good.
Michael, I know you're, I think, as Maddie is the leader of the Elias Lindholm fan club, you are definitely the leader of the Breadman's fan club, no?
Yeah, I think I'd be getting to that point. Yeah, to your point about that breakaway goal, like, he just looks so confident right now. That's something, like, I think it takes a lot of young players, even a couple of years, to figure out. But just the way he's been kind of, like, maybe early in his career, he would maybe just try, like you said, a quick shot after he got the puck there. But now he's creating turnovers, he's waiting, he's coming in, he's fighting off guys in front of the net and scoring these goals. Like, it's just so impressive to see him take that step and so quickly this season. Like, I don't think he's going to end up finishing on his 90-goal pace or whatever he's on right now, but it's been really impressive these first six games.
TSN put up a stat last night during the game that I think it was he might not have had his seventh goal, but it was like five of his six goals at that point have all been rising shots. Maybe one was like five hole or like bottom corner. Everything else has been blocker side high or glove side high. And his shot, Maddie, when he comes in, when he puts that puck up and it's going, it is pretty difficult to stop. As you saw with his first goal, I mean, he was being tangled up and then just boop, right over goalie's shoulder.
Yeah. And it's like, I do kind of wonder if the scoring is going to taper off a little bit once the goalies get a little bit more of a book on him, at least what he's doing this season. But I don't know, it's a sneaky good shot, and it keeps seeming to sneak up on goalies. But yeah,
and I mean, when you look at Mangiapane now, he and Elias Lindholm are tied for the league lead in goals with Ovechkin. I mean, it's not bad company to be in. At some point, Calgary is going to have to pay potentially both Johnny Gaudreau and Andrew Mangiapane. Michael, does Mangiapane's hot start, I mean, it's amazing for the Flames right now, but does it pose potential problems for the Flames down the line when it comes time for contracts?
I mean, like, I think absolutely it will. And it's kind of, I'm at the point right now where it's like, yeah, it's going to be an issue, but I kind of don't want to deal with it at the same time. Like, I kind of just want to enjoy where this season is going. But this is the giant, like, thing kind of hanging over all of it, is like, well, if they're playing this well, him and Gaudreau and Tkachuk are all going to want nice raises this summer if the team ends up having a really good season. So I'm kind of the opinion that, like, I think at this point we have to understand they're probably going to lose one of the three, and that's most likely going to be Gaudreau, just because the other two are going to take a good chunk of change. And I don't know. That's why I'm kind of back on the they need to go all in the season, like deadline acquisitions. Just kind of go for it, because I think at this point one of them is going to be priced out just with how they're all probably going to be looking for big raises this summer.
Maddie, you're shaking your head. You seem to agree with Michael.
Yeah, I don't really have too much to add. I just completely agree, and it's a little unfortunate that, you know, this is the nature of the game at this point with the salary cap. It's going to be sad to see probably Gaudreau go, but it's getting to a point, you know, you're not going to be able to justify not paying Tkachuk and Mangiapane. So, like, yeah. Flames' hands are kind of tied here.
Are you really sad, though? Because you kind of double dip here. So Johnny Gaudreau leaving Calgary also might be good for you on one end, right?
I mean, if he comes to Philly, I will stop complaining pretty quickly. But we'll see how that goes.
And I thought I read somewhere, I don't know if I'm correct or not, I thought he might have grown up outside of Philadelphia. Is that correct?
Really?
Yeah. Michael, is that true? Did Johnny Gaudreau grow up outside of Philadelphia? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I thought I heard that rumored at one point, okay. But nobody was able to confirm it.
Something else mentioned, we can backtrack a couple of games here. We can jump back into some Flames players. But former Flame player, I heard the Flames used to have his rights and they traded him. Adam Fox the other night went up against his former team, had a nice 3-point game the last time they met. But what's today? Monday night. Was it Monday Rangers? Yeah, because Tuesday was Devils. Yeah. So Monday with the Rangers. Mr. Fox did not exactly have his best game. Pointless, shotless. Was a minus one and got run over twice in one play by Milan Lucic. Obviously, Adam Fox is a fantastic talent. He will be a very good defenseman in this league for years to come. But just to quickly review that, we're all happy with Lindholm and Hanifin, right?
No complaints here.
No complaint. Michael?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good, as much as that, like him and Hamilton both leaving in that one trade was tough. Like, man, I think Lindholm has just been so good. And Hanifin, who has been quietly solid this year, again, like, I think for defensemen, if you don't really talk about them, that's usually a good sign. And, like, he's just been solid again this year, which I don't think we saw as much the first 2 years. So, yeah, no complaints with that trade, given all the situations involved.
Perfect. Michael, we're going to transition again. That was a nice, nice, solid transition talking about defensemen we don't talk about. Let's jump into a defenseman we have been talking about a lot, and mainly because we've all been going, what WTF? Like, what's the deal with him? Calgary is undefeated since Oliver Shillington has taken over for Nikita Zadorov. Maddie, your impressions on Oliver Shillington so far in his time on the ice?
Almost like he's a good player and should have been playing this whole time.
I know, right?
Are we surprised?
No, and it's like such a simple answer. It's dumbfounding. Michael, Shillington, like, why did it take so long?
I don't know. I was going to say we could probably go back and look at our podcast from like the last 3 years, and probably every second podcast we had a segment on when are they going to play Oliver Shillington. And it's just been so nice to see him with a good partner too. Like, that's the thing before, is when they played him, it was bottom pairing with whatever they could dredge up from either like Stockton or like a seventh defenseman that's barely hanging on to an NHL career. Like, to see him with Tanev and to see both of them just getting better with each game is so encouraging. And I think at this point, like, there's no question he's like a top four defenseman on this team, at least so far.
Yeah, and you look at too, like, he Tanev struggled for those first couple games when he was paired with Zadorov, and Darryl, much unlike his predecessors, made a move quickly, whereas you have to feel like Gullitson or Peters or Jeff Ward would have stuck with those pairings and just kept grinding them into the ground till it was like 30 games into the season and things were a nightmare. Sutter, to his credit, you know, didn't, you know, like Shillington's preseason, but likes his big, slow, heavy boys better. Pulled the plug on Zadorov rather quickly. So that was kind of nice to see, and giving Shillington a shot. And even like, though he's not complimentary of him either, like, Shillington had a really good game, probably was the Flames' best player against the Capitals. And he was asked afterwards about him. He goes, yeah, he did some good things, but there's still a lot of work. And I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, dude, he was the Flames' best skater. He was probably their best defenseman that day. And he's just still so like, he's like a dad who coaches his kid. You know, he's like, yeah, he was all right. You know, he scored 12 goals, but he was average, you know? But it's nice to actually see Shillington get it. And I feel like he's kind of stabilized that defense too. Like, Valimaki looks better on that bottom pairing as well. So are we all happy so far, Maddie, Flames defense, now that the garbage has been moved off the ice?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't super excited about seeing Zadorov like when the move happened. But yeah, it's been good. It seems like you kind of alluded to, it's this has allowed everything to kind of slot into its proper place. And I mean, this is as close to optimized if we as we've seen the defense looking in a little bit here. So that's been nice. Hopefully they can keep it rolling, but so far so good.
Michael, any last thoughts on the Flames defense?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say, like, kind of like Maddie said, like, I'm surprised that they moved off Zadorov so quickly, considering like they paid a third round pick and gave him a decent contract for 1 year to come in. But it's nice to see that they're not set in stone on what they want to do. Like, that was kind of what I think a lot of us were afraid of before. It was like Sutter would come in, just put in his big guys every night, whether or not they were doing well. And it was nice to see that, like, they would change so quickly on that front. And then also, the other guy I've been impressed with so far, I know it's early and I know he's not gonna be this good all year, but like I thought Erik Gudbranson's just been, for what we expected and even what we saw in the preseason, which was a pretty big train wreck, like 6 games in, he's got 3 points, I think, and has just been solid on the third pair. Like, not great. He's never gonna be great, but like for what I expected, it's been miles above what we could have even hoped for, I would say.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I remember like Gabranson and Zadorov during the preseason were kind of like the whipping boys for the Flames. Like, they were just like, oh my God, here we go, two more horrible defensemen. But yeah, now that Gudbranson has settled in, he's got, I think, 3 assists in his last 3 games. 2 of them came in one, and then he picked up a helper the other day. So again, if you're not looking out on the ice going, what is 44 doing, you're doing okay. So I say, you know, I'm probably with everybody else, I think the Flames defensive core is, you know, good. I mean, somebody's going to need a day off at some point, so you're going to see Stone or Zadorov back in. But I like the fact that Darryl Sutter isn't stubborn with things. If we can continue on with the stubborn theme, we'll talk about Sutter hockey after the break. But I'll be honest, when the season started, I was expecting, just based on him wearing a letter and past performance, that Sutter was going to cram Sean Monahan into one of those two lines on the top two and the top six and drag it down like he's has been doing. And we know Monahan's been playing hurt, and I have a thought on that that I can get into later. But I like the fact that Sutter's like, dude, you're rehabbing, you're coming back, you're not the player you used to be, playing the bottom six. Monahan to me has always been a guy the last couple of years that's kind of disappeared. He's been invisible at times on the ice. And if he's going to be invisible in the bottom six, I don't particularly care. Matt, he's been a little bit more physical this year. I don't expect a boatload of points out of him or comeback player of the year. But what are your thoughts on Monahan? Is it just kind of like, are we reaching the end of the road, or do you have some hopes for him?
It kind of does feel like the end of the road at this point. And like you said, I'm also really encouraged by the fact that Sutter isn't trying to shoehorn him into a top six role when he's like frankly not playing like he deserves it. And you know, he's got a significant injury to come back from, so there's that as well. But it does seem like, yeah, we're nearing the end here. But if they've found a spot in the lineup for him where he can be optimized and still useful, and it doesn't disturb the rest of the lines that are clicking pretty well right now, that seems like it's pretty much for the best.
Michael, your thoughts on Monahan? Was his kind of, not his fate sealed, but the play against Anaheim in overtime, was that kind of like you saw that happen with Monahan and you're like, all right, we pretty much know what we're going to get out of Monahan from now on?
Well, yeah, that play in particular, it just felt like as soon as he got on the ice, like it just wasn't going to work as soon as they lost the puck, which is exactly what ended up happening. I don't know, for me, Monahan, like I think he's kind of in the spot maybe he always should have been. Like he's probably at his core like a bottom six forward that just has a really good shot, which is why I think it still makes sense to keep him on that top power play. Like he still had his chances the last couple of games, like even at even strength or on the power play. Like I think he is what he is at this point. He probably rode Gaudreau to some of those big numbers early in his career, but I think at the end of the day, like this might be a good spot for him. The rest of the team now seems to finally have the depth to allow him to kind of be further down the lineup. And who knows, like we said, he's still rehabbing, and if he can just kind of be like at least a decent player in the bottom six and then come up for the power play and whip in a few here and there, like I don't have any issues with him. I don't know if that's what he'll like long term, but I don't have any issues with his usage right now.
Agree. And I think I'm probably in the minority. I'm one of those, like, you know, there's always that old saying when you coach players, it's, are you injured or are you hurt? you always ask a guy that comes out the field, you can play injured, right? You have, you're dinged up a little, you can't play hurt. And to me, it was always like, if Monahan knew that his hip was toast 13 games into the season, I mean, I know athletes are competitive and everything else, but for the betterment of him and for the betterment of the team, I'm one of those people that's like, dude, you should have shut yourself. Like, something should have been done at that point, because now you're damaging your chances long-term with the franchise and your health and, you know, your own playing ability. And I'm probably definitely on the minority in that thing, but I just think, like, if he had been that hurt, he probably should have been shut down way earlier. And I think that's probably on player and organization. Maddie, go.
I was just going to say, I think for me, that does come down to, or come down on, you know, coach management or something like that, because we know, like you said, players are going to want to play through whatever they're dealing with. That's just how it is. And I think somebody needs to be the grown up in the room to be like, no, actually you're hurting the team and you're making yourself worse. We've got to shut it down for a bit.
Absolutely. It's a very solid point, and I'm 100% in agreement with you on that one as well. So we're going to take a quick break here on the Tinderbox. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Daryl Sutter hockey, and then we will touch on briefly the situation going on in Chicago, which is, I think gross would probably be an understatement, but an appropriate word to use at this time. So pause right here while we pay some bills, and we will be right back on the Tinderbox.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the Tinderbox podcast for Matchsticks and Gasoline, the Calgary Flames website for SB Nation. Mark, Maddie, and Michael today. Daryl Sutter hockey was going to be boring. It was going to be slow. It was going to be plodding. The Flames were only going to score 2 goals a game and win 2-0, 2-1, lose 2-1, lose 4-2. Lots of big, heavy, slow guys. You know, Elias Lindholm and Andrew Mangiapane are tied for the league lead in goals. Johnny Gaudreau has 7 assists. The Flames, they're pretty boring to watch, aren't they, Maddie?
They're fun in the first period. I'll give them that.
Right. I think it's the first time you ever look at a Flames team and go, well, they only played 20 minutes, but they won 5-3. So that's all that matters, right? Michael, we're always complaining the Flames don't play 60 minutes, but short of a couple games this season, Sutter hockey has been good enough in the first period to for them to get heavy and slow, clog the neutral zone, stand teams up at the blue line. Is this something that's sustainable for Calgary this season?
Well, I want to say yes and no, because it's nice to see that they're starting on time. I know you and I have talked about this a few times, that like one thing the Flames always struggled with, it seems like, with this core is that they never seem to start on time. But watching them this year has just been such a breath of fresh air. And then, like you said, once they get up 2-3 nothing and they can kind of just shut things down the rest of the night, like, I don't know how sustainable it is long term, because you're not going to be up every game like that. But just to see them coming out and playing hard. And then also, I did want to touch on this a bit earlier, but they've also done a really good job, I thought, of like bouncing back when things go against them this year, which we haven't seen before. Like, I was thinking specifically like the Capitals game, they gave up a 3-0 lead. Every other year, they would have lost like 6-3 by the time it was over. Even the Ranger game, they gave up that first goal against to make it 2-1. Like, last year, that would have ended up being a 4-2 loss or something. So I don't know how sustainable this is all going to be at the end of the day, but like, it seems to be a good recipe for now if you give your goalie a 3-goal cushion after the first period.
Yeah, and especially with Washington, they gave their backup goalie a 3-goal cushion. They surrendered 3, which honestly, I don't think Vladar played poorly against Washington at all. He definitely had some issues last night where he played the puck poorly, turned it over, and it became a goal. And then he had one where like his mask was partially off, and instead of just throwing his mask off and getting the whistle, he just played with half of it. It was weird. It's a weird scenario. But Yeah, I think, you know, you give up three goals, Maddie, to Washington, especially knowing the firepower that that team has, and you go to overtime and you beat them in overtime with your backup goalie. It's nice to be able to do these things for a change.
Yeah, exactly. It feels really fresh. And not to get too into like a this team just feels different. This year feels different sort of thing. Like, however many games into the season we are, it's so early, but like it is, it's different. Will they hold on to it? We'll see. But like,
yeah,
I'll appreciate it while it lasts.
It's just so nice to have the Flames not have to roar back from like that season where they, Michael, how was the season? How many come from behind wins where they were like Findaway Flames. Yes, we're like, they'd be down 3-0 and Gaudreau get a hat trick, and Gio at Christmas Eve, the day before Christmas Eve, December 23rd, Gaudreau gets a hat trick against the Kings to bring him back into it, and then Gio wins it in overtime 4-3. Like stuff like that. Like that team was like so much fun to watch because they were so bad in the first two periods, and then they were like third period magic. But it's nice to actually turn on a game and from like the puck drop to the first horn, be like, oh, okay, well, this game, I can do laundry now, or, you know, I can do the dishes or whatever, because they got a 3 or 4 goal cushion. Standings wise, the Flames are fourth place right now in the Western Conference behind the Wild, Oilers, and Blues, which now, if you can do the math and put everything together, the only team ahead of them right now in the Pacific is Edmonton, who are 5-0-0. I don't think the Oilers probably can sustain undefeated hockey forever. With McDavid and, you know, Draisaitl and Puljujarvi and everybody else, but Calgary done some nice work getting themselves back into the division. No,
that's a nice little cushion they've got.
Yeah, likely. So we come up now road trip wise. Calgary now will be finishing up their road trip with a stop at Pittsburgh on Thursday. The Penguins are currently 3-1-2 and fourth in the Metropolitan, which is Metropolitan can be a tough division for sure. So 3-1-2 in fourth place isn't bad, considering the Flames are 4-1-1 and they're in second place. Post that, Calgary, where did I lost my train of thought? Okay, here we go. They come home. They got a nice little home stretch here. They've got the Flyers, the Predators, the Stars, the Rangers, and Sharks. Not murderer's row, but once again, teams that will give you a hard time. Expectations, first off, finishing this road trip, think the Flames can sweep the road trip?
Yeah, I think they have a decent shot at it. Like, I heard Crosby's coming back for Pittsburgh more than likely on Thursday, so that's going to be a challenge. But I don't know. I didn't expect them to win all these games, but like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. They're hot right now. I think they're going to just keep rolling. So I would say yes, they're going to win on Thursday. But
yeah, Maddie, typically a 500 road trip was a win for the Flames. Coming home, looking, you know, Philly, Nashville, Dallas, the Rangers again, and the Sharks. What are your hopes for that homestand?
I don't know. I think a split there would be good. I think the Flyers one is going to be, I don't quite know what to make of that. If it depends if Ryan Ellis plays, if he's out still, that's going to be a much more manageable game. But I think they're all very, very winnable games on deck. So it's like you talked about earlier, taking care of the teams they probably should beat. If they can keep that up, that would be stellar.
It's like the first time the NHL schedule makers have helped the Flames out instead of coming off a road trip and coming home to Edmonton, Winnipeg, Dallas, St. Louis, Minnesota, you know, teams that they typically tend to struggle with. The Flames have not a cushy schedule, but it's a nice time of year to be able to build up, you know, some goodwill with the schedule. And I mean, you look at even after that, they go on the road for, they have a very long road trip. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the road. Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, Philly, Buffalo, the Islanders, and Bruins. So not an easy road trip by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you got Ottawa and Buffalo in there, you know, you've got games that are winnable. After that, they go to the Blackhawks, and we'll touch upon Chicago very quickly because this is a very gross subject, everything that's going on in Chicago. If you haven't been paying attention, in 2010, the Blackhawks are in trouble for issues that happened in 2010, and I would assume carried on for years after that. Chicago is in deep trouble with the league. They've been fined $2 million for issues of sexual assault, harassment. It's just, it's an absolute nightmare what's going on in Chicago. And as much as this is an NHL issue, I don't think it's a hockey. Hockey has its own issues, clearly. Junior hockey's got plenty of problems, had plenty of problems. You know, there was racism overseas this year with hockey. You saw the stuff that the Flames went down with Bill Peters from his past. But you also have the Raiders and John Gruden. Personally, I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan, and they're trying to go after Deshaun Watson, and there's issues with that. Like, sports is a really icky place right now outside of, you know, if you step away from the fun. Does anybody have any thoughts, anything they want to discuss on Chicago other than I will say, I think what happened up there is just, it's disgusting. It never should have happened. It can't happen again, but I think we all know, unfortunately, in some corner of the world, on some team, on some locker room, on some bus, it's going to happen again because people are just gross. Maddie, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's reprehensible across the board. I have a really hard time giving the Blackhawks any props for how they've handled the situation. Even now, it seems like they've just done the absolute bare minimum. Even, you know, not firing Bowman, but giving him a chance to resign, I think is pretty cowardly. And I'm looking at on Twitter a quote from Jeremy Colliton from practice today, and it's not leaving me feeling very good about the state of hockey even now, where he said, the Stan I know, that's not his values. It's hard to separate the two. Personally, I just think that you feel for him while also understanding that hockey culture, we got to make sure we're doing the right things. Like, I don't think you do have to feel for him.
No.
I think that's a pretty gross quote. And I'm just not feeling very good about any of this.
Michael, your thoughts on the Chicago Blackhawks' complete mess that they're in right now, to their own doing, for the record.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, first of all, like, hats off to the reporter, like Rick Westhead and the others that were all involved in bringing this out. Like, I can't imagine when this is your career that it's that easy to, like, out a story like this, knowing that you're probably going to burn some bridges in the process. So, like, hats off to them. In terms of all this, I just want to say, like, the couple of things I thought during all this coming out was, like, I can't remember who got the quote exactly, but it, like, when they were debating dealing with it during that meeting back in 2010, that they didn't want to upset the chemistry of their team because they didn't know if they'd make it deep in the playoffs again. Like, I thought, as gross as everything was with that story, I just thought that's, like, such an indictment on what hockey culture really is. It's like, we're not going to deal with this, like, serious criminal matter because we might lose a few games in the playoffs. Like, if you want to point at what's wrong with sport right now, I think that's one of those things, is that teams are putting victories over people and legitimate issues like this.
Yeah, go ahead, Maddie.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I've seen, I don't know, some people talking about this, like, hockey culture isn't always inherently bad. There's very much this feeling of, we look out for our own here, and that can be a very good thing, but what we're seeing with how everything was handled in Chicago is how ugly that can turn very quickly.
Yeah, and you look at how it comes down to, like, what's Quinville's role in this? You know, I mean, he's not in Chicago anymore, but now he's having to answer questions like this. What about Taves and Kane? You know, leaders on that team, like, where, what do they know? What did they do? What didn't they do? You know, and I think that's where, you know, it's the whole win now and we'll deal with sexual assault and rampant, you know, homophobia and racism afterwards. To me, I'm sorry, winning doesn't top just being a good human being. You know, like, that's where you have to draw the line. We did the column earlier about we have to be better as people, and it still shows. I don't take the hockey culture. I don't care. Screw hockey culture. Forget, you know, you hear about football, tough guy sport. No, people are people. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter what sport you play. You're still a human being. Okay. And the toughest, meanest guy on the football team still has feelings, you know, same thing on the ice. And to just put those things aside and be like, well, we'll win now and we'll deal with, you know, sexual assault of our players later. No, you can't. Like, that takes precedence, I think, over anything else, and as it should in any section of society. No,
absolutely.
Anybody have any final thoughts on this? We want to just let that one go as it is.
I just hope this isn't the end. There's certainly, like you said, more people who are responsible who should be held responsible. And I'm sure there are other icky, reprehensible things that have been buried by organizations elsewhere in the league, in sports in general. And I hope that there are still reporters and people out there fighting the good fight.
Yep. I think you're going to see if, you know, I think once this stuff starts to come out more, I think you'll probably find other teams are going to have similar issues, maybe not to that level, but they may have some skeletons in their closets as well. All right, we're going to wrap it up here on the Tinderbox. Maddie and Michael, thank you so much for coming on, talking Flames hockey and handling a tougher topic, but I know something that definitely needed to be discussed. If you enjoy this podcast, you can find it on iTunes, Google Podcast, or Spotify. Just search up the Tinderbox or Matchsticks and Gasoline. You can find us under any Calgary Flames podcast links. You can also find us on the web, www.matchsticksandandgasoline.com, on Twitter at MatchsticksCGY, and on Instagram at MatchsticksCGY as well. Flames are off tonight. They next hit the ice on Thursday where they take on the Pittsburgh Penguins at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. You guys in Alberta, you get your TV dinner and set it up in the living room and watch the Flames play as you come home from work. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time on the Tinderbox.